Namaste. Welcome to the course on Introduction to Vedanta. So we'll start the course very quickly. As soon as the teacher shares her screen, so we'll there is some audio background noise. I think it will be sorted out with time. Sometimes the momentum and when the teacher starts speaking, the noise will settle down. So we'll just wait and we'll start the class. So we'll start with a mangalam and then just a couple of words about using the webinar. Gururev gatir gurumeva bhaje gurunaiva sahasminamo gurave na guroh paramam shishurasmi guror matirasti gurau mama pahi guru. So we had the auspicious occasion of Guru Purnima just yesterday. So saluting our gurus from Vyoma Samskrita Pathashala, we are very happy to start this new course called Introduction to Vedanta, being presented by Mrs. Rama Sivaraman. So she has been studying the texts of Advaita Vedanta from Swami Paramarthananda for over 15 years. And she is presenting this course based on a similar Introduction to Vedanta, which has been conceptualized by the Swamiji. The webinars will happen for an approximate 10 weeks is what we have planned. So just a few words about using the webinar to the best thing. All attendees are muted initially to avoid disturbance. As you have seen, just even one mic unmuted will cause a lot of disturbance. So you will be muted, but there are two ways with which you can interact with the teacher. The first one is called a raise your hand feature. So there is one symbol with the hand and an arrow pointing upwards. So it will be visible both if you are logged in through the phone or through the mobile. So if you just click on it once, we can see your hand as raised. So at an interval, when the teacher has given a break for questions, if you just raise your hand, we can unmute you and you can ask the questions and the teacher will answer you. The other option is to type in your questions. So there is a option to ask a question, so wherein you can type in your question and they will also be answered. So to make sure that you get the best out of it, each question may not be answered immediately. So the teacher will first take you through her presentation. So once at some point when she breaks for the questions, we'll take the questions and they'll be answered. Okay. So after the class, the recording will be uploaded in our portal www.sanskritfromhome.in. Okay. So with this, I will hand it over to Mrs. Rama Sivaraman. Madam, can you hear us?
Yeah, thanks, Sonia. Namaste, everyone. I hope you know.
I can't see your screen yet, so maybe you should share your screen.
Yes. Can you see it now?
Yes, we can hear. See it now.
We can see it. Oh, thank you. Thanks, Sonia. I think today being the first class, I might need a little bit of hand-holding on the technology side. So, thank you very much and namaste to everybody. We, as is a normal practice, we will start with a small prayer to the Guru Parampara. Sadashiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam Asmadacharya Pariyantam Vande Guru Paramparam Om. This is a prayer with which we remember and pray, actually thank with reverence the Guru Parampara, because of whom we are able to conduct these forces and understand what Vedanta has to offer to us. And therefore, every week we will start the class with this prayer. And Yeah, this is the prayer which you can see on the screen. I will anyway be putting up this PDF after the class, so you can definitely go through this and, you know, get by heart. Every week, it's a practice for all of us to say this together because it's the thanking of the Guru Parampara. So every single student thanks the rest of the Gurus in the Parampara. Moving on, this is actually a photograph of Swami Paramarthananda, who is my Guru, from whom I have learned all these years, and I have managed to today come to a stage where I'm able to share this learning with all of you. And this is Swami Paramarthananda, and he actually comes from the lineage of Swami Chinmayananda and Swami Dayananda Saraswati. And we must be ever thankful to both these Gurus, who had actually took the bold step of packaging the Vedanta course into a structured program like this. And in fact, in Chinmaya Mission as well as in the Dayananda Saraswati Ashram, they have this as a 3-year program, and they have packaged it into a wonderful curriculum. And this is thanks to the new type of framework and methodology that was introduced by these two Gurus in particular. I'm thankful to them also, and Swami Paramarthananda for permitting me to actually do this course. This curriculum is completely based on what Swamiji had done earlier, and it is called Introduction to Vedanta. So a disclaimer before I get into the rest of the, you know, class. The spiritual journey is a very long one, spanning a lifetime and often, in fact, multiple janmas. So this course here is only to present a brief overview, and it's not a substitute for a consistent and systematic study for a length of time under a live and competent guru. So this is what my guru says, and I thought it is very, very important for us to be able to, you know, remember that this is definitely not a substitute. Therefore, it is just an overview, and therefore, I think I'm now on air. I will try and switch off at some point in time if I feel that the bandwidth problem. Okay. So, I just wanted to make sure that this disclaimer is, put here, because I'm not attempting to teach the entire Vedanta in 10 weeks. It will be foolish of me to think so, right? So what I'm going to communicate is just, I would say, the tip of the iceberg, right? So moving on. So what we have tried to do, and this is again a structure which was created by Swami Paramarthananda. This is actually a set of about 15 topics, and we would be doing different topics in different sessions. The earlier rendering that I have done on this program has normally taken about 10 to 12 hours, and so I expect that it is the same kind of time that we would take to cover these topics. Some days we would cover one topic, some days we would actually cover two, but not generally never more than two. And before going into this, I just wanted to talk about a few things. First of all, this whole course is based on a book, on a text called Sattva Bodha. So when you see these set of topics, starting from topic 9, we would be actually summarizing Sattva Bodha. But the topics that lead up to it, the first 8 topics, are ideas that are present in general across several texts. It is just packaged into various topics from 1 to 8, from Purushartha to Bhakti Yoga. So we will be doing this mainly based on whatever we see in, say, the Prasthana Trayam, that is Gita, Upanishad, Brahma Sutra, etc., as well as a portion from topic 9 onwards will be based on Tattva Bodha, right? So that is what this Introduction to Vedanta will cover, right? And we will be discussing all important terminologies that we would be needing for, embarking on a study of Vedanta. So anybody who is interested in pursuing a Vedanta study in depth after this can do so. Or if a person is happy just knowing what Vedanta is all about, that purpose will also be served through this particular introductory course. So without any further delay, let's move on to the topic. Today I'm hoping to cover two topics. One is on Purushartha and the second one is actually on the layout of our scriptures itself, right? So if there are questions, I will stop at logical points and I will definitely, you know, take questions. But I think more or less today it will be more of, you know, putting, presenting an overview to you rather than having any discussion. But it's okay. We will see how it goes. I will always stop and look for, you know, people who are wanting to ask questions, right? So let's enter into topic one. Topic one is Purushartha, right? And Purushartha, what does it mean? Purushartha means human goal, right? Purusha here does not mean just a man. It is generally referring to a human being. So man or woman, and Purushartha, which represents a goal, right? So what is the meaning of Purushartha? If you see, it can have multiple meanings. The meaning can be meaning itself, right? Artha being meaning. It could be wealth, right, which is the second meaning of artha, or it could be human goal. So here Purushartha we are going to talk about is referring to human goal. In certain other contexts, it also can refer to free will, it can refer to choice, right, or it can refer to certain other efforts, right, but here we are talking about Purushartha, which is in particular referring to human goal, right? And because of the availability of Purushartha, the human beings become very distinct or different from other living beings. So that which is sought after by every human being is called Purushartha. Now, there is a very famous Hitopadesha saying which goes like this: Ahara Nidra Bayamaitu Namcha Samanya Metat Pashubhir Naranam Buddhirhi Tesham Adiko Visheshaha Buddhya Vihinaha Pashubhis Samanaha. Now there are variations in this particular shloka. Sometimes they use the word, instead of buddhi they use dharma, right? Sometimes they use vidya. But here the context of buddhi is much better, right? So we will see what is the meaning of this. Human beings and the other living beings are similar in several respects, right? Very many respects they are similar, but in some respects they are different. So we will see where they are similar. Now if you take Ahara, which is the first one, right? All of them seek food. Right from birth onwards, they start seeking food. Whether it is human being or whether it is an animal, right? And if you take Nidra, that is nothing but sleep. So sleep is also something that's very common to all living beings. And Bayam, right? Bayam is fear, because of which they look for security. And Maithunam is, of course, here in this place, it refers to companionship, right? And there is a fear of external world in the form of Bayam. And Samanya Metat Pashubhir Naranam. So in all of these respects, if you see, an animal or any living being and a human being is similar. But what is it that makes a human being very different? If you see, it is buddhi. Buddhi or intellect. And intellect makes a human being think, and because of which he has a thinking faculty, a judging faculty, a reasoning faculty, as well as something that he uses to project the future, right? So, because of this reason, the human being is different from an animal, right? Result of an intellect is, what happens is, the person becomes self-conscious and there is a self-complex development. Okay, he is better off than me, I am not as good as him. And Swamiji always uses this example of, you know, a dog show. In a dog show, there are lot of dogs participating in the dog show. Now, nobody ever bothers whether, none of the dogs bother whether they actually get a first or second prize or they're getting a gold medal or not. The person who develops the complex is actually the human being who develops this complex and not the animals, right? So, the complex development occurs because of the intellect, right? And the Shastra states that the intellect is also very useful for so many other things, like you plan for the future, you work, it makes us a superior being because of that reason. And obviously, you have to use the intellect. And if the intellect is not used, then the human being becomes just an animal, right? So, therefore, what happens is, the entire life of animals becomes governed by instinct, right? It is completely governed by instinct, whereas the human beings, they also have instincts because there are certain common features with animals, but they have a capacity to choose their future, right? And human beings, therefore, entertain a lot of goals. The dog show example that I gave, the dog is not going to say, okay, this year I got third prize, next year I have to get first prize. The dog is not going to do that. Whereas the human being will definitely entertain a lot of goals based on what he is achieving today, right? So he always has this thinking capacity and therefore looks for the goals, and the goals are countless or ananta. Goals are countless or ananta, and they are of four kinds. All goals, all human goals fall under just four categories. Chaturvidha Purushartha is the term that we use for representing the four categories of Purushartha. Now, the first one is Artha, right? So, the human goals are four kinds and the first one is Artha. Now, those of you who have studied psychology or, have studied organizational behavior, you would have studied about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and you can see the very, very strong resemblance, right? Now, you know what came first and what came next. I don't have to speak about it. But this is Artha, which is, basic needs of a human being, right? What are they? Security related, food, clothing, shelter, and health, as well as future security. These are the ones that come under Artha. Now, once we take care of all the Artha, now in some countries, what will happen is, by the time we take care of Artha, our life is almost over. We don't even have time to do other things because the country's economy is like that. Now, there are other places where you can move on to other more refined goals. So, a very gross or basic level goal is Artha. Now, beyond Artha comes Kama, which is nothing but desires. Kama here represents desires, and the desires are more like for luxury, for comfort, and for entertainment, which means you can live without these kind of goals, but we are desirous as human beings. We have goals which pertain to desires. We want to have a new TV. We want to have a new washing machine. We want to take world tours. We want to build one house. Then we want to build more houses for the children. We want to save for the future, etc. All those comes under this desire, right? Comfort, entertainment, and luxury. Now, the third goal is called Dharma. Now, Dharma is something which is very, very unique to the Hindu culture, and Dharma is something which is invisible, right? And it's an invisible form of wealth, and what we refer to as good luck or good fortune or adrishtam, which cannot be seen. So, your punyam comes under Dharma category, and If you remember, many people, when they have problems in life, ask this fundamental question saying, why is it that there are a few people who suffer so much and there are a few people who do not suffer? Or why is a child born in a particular family and why is another child born in a different family? Now, this happens because when the child is born, he or she has not done anything wrong or right visibly now that we are aware of. So, a person is given a birth in a particular family with a particular surroundings based on what punyam or papam he has acquired in multiple janmas. This is a very, very unique concept to the Hindu culture, and dharma is something that one does as a human goal to acquire good fortune or good luck. Right? So that is the third category. I'm not going to spend too much time on this because we are going to be speaking about punyam, papam, etc. as we go to the law of karma coming up in the 13th or 14th topic. Right? So dharma is something that can help you do better in this janma, and it can help you sort of get artha, kama, etc. It can also help you acquire punya, which can help you in this janma as well as the future janma. So that is the third purushartha. And so this, the first three purusharthas, dharma, artha and kama, are very commonly referred to as preyaha in the Vedantic terms, right? So it will be useful for us to remember preyaha, which refers to dharma, artha, kama, right? And the fourth topic is moksha, or the fourth goal is moksha. So freedom from slavery with regard to preyaha is moksha. It simply put, just to get out of the freedom from working for the first three goals is moksha. Because the first three goals, always we have the fear that something that we acquire can go away. Okay, we have acquired punyam, it can get exhausted. We have acquired a house, that can go away. We have money, that may go away tomorrow in the stock market. Or today I have a position, tomorrow I will be nobody. So this fear is always there in 1, 2 and 3. And the freedom from slavery with regard to preyaha is moksha in simple terms. And Kathopanishad says, Shreyasya preyasya manushya netaha, tau samparitya vivanakti dhiraha, Preyo hi dhiro hi preyaso vinite, preyo mando yogakshema vinite. What this means is, this is actually the context is that Yamadharma Raja is speaking to a 9-year-old Nachiketa, right? And Nachiketa had so much of wisdom in him that he could actually choose the correct boon. And in that context, Yama is talking to Nachiketa saying, both Shreyas and Preyas approach the human being having very clearly considered both of them. The discriminative person chooses Shreyas over Preyas. So Shreyas is nothing but the fourth purusharta, which is moksha, right? So with this, I'm going to leave this topic of purusharta here because we're going to come back and revisit this and connect all the dots together at some point in time. So moksha, as I said, is freedom from slavery with regard to preyaha, right? With respect to an object or person. And when you get an object or a person, as I said, you can be worried about the absence or presence. And moksha is, I'm comfortable with dharmartha kama or without dharmartha kama also. I'm equally comfortable without and with dharmartha kama. I am not worried if it goes away. I'm happy if it is there also. I'm neutral. I'm not getting extremely attached to any of these. That is moksha. So the inner strength, the inner maturity, the inner mastery is called moksha, right? And what does Vedanta help and where does it fit in? The Upanishads or the Vedanta help us in achieving this. Getting moksha, which is the ultimate goal of human life, is what is being communicated to the Upanishads and the Vedanta, right? So this is where I'm going to stop on topic one. In case anybody has questions related to this, I can take or I can proceed to the second topic, which is scriptures. Soumya, can I proceed?
There is a question, actually, Ma. If you can see in the question section, one of the question is, what is the difference between dharma in Hinduism and dhamma in Buddhism? The second question is, what is preya?
Okay, preya, I think I already clarified. Dharma, artha and kama as per Hindu religion is preya. Now, dhamma and dharma, I wouldn't know the difference right away. I think I should definitely find out and come back to you, because I am more clear about Hinduism than other religions. I'm very sorry, but I can come back to you on this.
Okay.
Right?
The next question is, how is Sharanagati different from Shreyas?
Okay. Shreyas is Mokshaha, and if we can wait to understand the exact term Moksha, what it means, till we finish about 10 or 11 topics, it would help, because Mokshaha is a very complex, Moksham, right? Moksham is a very, very complex topic that cannot be explained that easily in a 5 minutes question and answer session. So I would request you to wait. And also another thing, Vishwam as well as Soumya, if I can collect these questions so that I can mark them as when can it be answered, and then go back and methodically answer all of them, it will help, because some of these I will be able to answer only after I've covered some substantial portion.
Sure, sure. All these questions will be available after
this. We can make a list, and then finally you can go back to them and clarify.
Yeah, very good. Sharanagati will come under Preyaha, so we will see that also. Sharanagati is a form of bhakti and prayer to God, so we are going to cover all of that in the coming session.
Yeah. There are more questions. What is Dharma and what is Sanatana Dharma? The meaning is being asked.
Yeah. I'm actually going to enter the scriptures session now. Sanatana Dharma refers to the scriptures and the way, the Hindu way of life itself. And here, when I talked about Dharma, specifically when we talk about the human goal of Dharma, we are talking about doing religious puja activities to acquire punyam and papa, as well as get worldly goals. Sanatana Dharma refers to our entire Hindu way of praying, religion, scriptures, the entire whatever I'm going to cover in topic 2 refers to Sanatana Dharma.
Okay. More questions, I think a lot of interesting questions are coming. The next question is, does it mean one does not have to die to gain moksha? That is one question.
Okay. Can we, this question also can be answered only after session 10, I think, 10 or 11. So, topic 10 or 11. So, we will put down, and what I will do is methodically I will respond saying will be answered in this session.
Yeah. Okay. And why is Dharma not considered on par with Moksha? Isn't that also a noble aspiration?
Yeah. All of this will get answered.
Perfect. Evidently. Is there, I think this one will be more relevant for today. Is there a specific reason as to why you made the order as Artha Kama Dharma Moksha and not Dharma Artha Kama Moksha?
Yes. Because is exactly like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. First, you take care of basic needs, then you take care of desires. Now, you can say that a few people may place Dharma ahead of all of them. They are a very different set of people, unique, maybe 2% of the human population. So, we are talking about 95-99% of the population, which will first take care of basic needs, then desires, then Dharma.
Okay. Next is, any correlation between the four ashramas and the four arthas?
Yeah. I'm going to be doing the four ashramas next week's class. So, I will be covering that as well as, what is relevant in this week's ashrama. Yes.
Perfect. So, similar question, moksha can be gained when we are alive? If you are neutral to Dharma, Artha and Kama, so somebody is supporting that view and giving a comment. And then there is one more question. Is Dharma static with respect to time, or is it dynamic with respect to time?
The single word is dynamic, but I won't be able to explain it now.
Yes.
It will get explained for sure. It is dynamic and it will get explained.
And there are more questions. Do I continue? I think there are three more questions. Can I quickly tell the questions?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay. While the first three arthas can be ongoing throughout life, the moksha is only at the end, right? So how can we pursue that midstream itself?
Will all this get clarified by the time I get to the last topic?
Perfect. And can you please explain more on prayers? One more question which you have already answered. Should artha and karma is what I think probably they meant it as karma being contained within dharma and moksha?
Yes, actually, I spoke about it. They are individual ones. All four are different goals.
So a more little bit question, like you define karma as a luxury, but shouldn't karma be a necessity also?
Oh, food security, all of the necessity things come under the first category.
Those are the only questions as of now.
Just keep them. Excellent questions, and I will make sure that all of these are answered by the time I get to the last topic. Now I will also take the opportunity to let people know that it is important for us to attend all the sessions here because any single session will not make meaning unless the prerequisite, the previous sessions are covered. So I just wanted to leave that thought with people because, you know, in case you miss a session and you're coming to the next session, if you could listen to the recording and come, it will help you. Because otherwise you will find it difficult to catch up. That's all. I just wanted to leave that thought with people. Okay? So, can I continue now, Vishwam, with scripture?
Yeah. All the questions are done as of now.
So, thank you.
We can continue. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay. Now, I'm moving on to the scriptures. Now, what I did was, with a lot of hesitation, I put together a slide which is indicated, you know, as the big picture. Now, the reason why I did this is, like me, when I started out on the Vedantic journey, having been an engineering student and having been in an organization, I always wanted to have that feel of, oh, where's the big world map and where am I there, right? So I said, okay, let me put this together, but there is a risk that we get completely sidetracked into an area which is not at all the objective of this course. So I'm going to be a little cautious as I go through these slides and tell you that this is our focus point and this is where we will be spending most of our time, right? So without any further delay, let me get in. So the systems of philosophies which were prevalent around Shankaracharya's time, okay, they are the what we call as Astika Darshanani and Nastika Darshanani, okay. This is basically around the time of Shankaracharya's, you know, life. There were about six Astika Darshananis and six Nastika Darshananis, very popular at that time, right. Darshanani in Darshanam indicates philosophy. Right? So, we had one called Nyaya, we had one called Vaisheshika, a third one called Sankhya, okay? And then we had Yoga, and then we had the Purva Mimamsa and Uttara Mimamsa, right? These were the ones that were prevalent at that time, right? Now, these six are called Astika Darshananis because all of them had belief in Vedas. Okay. Please note that Astika here refers to belief in Vedas and Nastika Darshanani refers to the philosophies which did not have a belief in Vedas. Right. Charvaka, Jainism and Buddhism are the three. Sometimes, because Buddhism has four sects, we count them as 4 + 1 + 1, therefore 6 Nastika Darshananis and 6 Astika Darshananis, right? And with this, now if you take Nyaya, if you take Vaisheshika, Sankhya, Yoga and the other two, in Nyaya there was too much of Tarka, right? And Vaisheshika also, and each of these had different proponents. If you see, you have Samkhya Darshanam, which was propounded by Kapila Muni, Yoga, which you all will be knowing, Patanjali, Vaisheshika by Kanada, and Nyaya Darshanam of Gautama, and Purva Mimamsa, Jainini, and Uttara Mimamsa was Vyasacharya. Now, several of these, Nyaya, Samkhya, Yoga, they all have their own theories around creation, etc. So, we are not going to be discussing any of these in our sessions, but this is the big picture, and what we are going to be discussing today and in the subsequent weeks is Astika Darshanani, Uttara Mimamsa, and the Advaita philosophy, which comes under Uttara Mimamsa, right? Now, Advaita comes under Uttara Mimamsa because it has belief in the Vedas, and we also believe in Ishvara. And Uttara Mimamsa, the main proponent or the philosopher, was Vyasacharya. Now, we refer to a lot of Purva Mimamsa portions also for the rituals, but from a Vedantic aspect, the Jnana Kanda aspect, it is more Uttara Mimamsa, which will be the primary one that we will be focusing on, right? So now if you see, I'm just now highlighting Astika Darshanani, Purva Mimamsa and Uttara Mimamsa, and the Veda, I'm just entering into Vedas or the scriptures, the Vedas cater to both Veda Purva Bhaga and Veda Anta Bhaga, and it covers Purva Mimamsa part as well as Uttara Mimamsa part. The difference between the two being, Purva Mimamsa is highly ritual oriented and Uttara Mimamsa is the Vedantic part or the Upanishadic part, which is more contemplative and, you know, looking at moksha as the ultimate goal. We will see where all they are overlaps and what kind of overlaps are there, right? And therefore, when we now talk of scriptures, I am going to focus on Uttara Mimamsa and what are all the, you know, various Shankaracharyas and Acharyas pertaining to the Advaitic culture. And, you know, therefore, my whatever I speak is also going to be restricted to Shankara Bhashyam and Shankaracharya's lineage, right? So now with that, I enter the subject of scriptures itself, the vastness of the scriptures. Shastram means a literature which commands the human beings in the initial stages and then teaches in the later stages, right? Now, Shastram is derived from the root Shastra, okay, which has two meanings. One is to command and other is to teach, right? So, by way of commanding and teaching the scriptures, now it helps, it saves a person from all human problems. The scriptures have solutions to most of the, to almost all the human problems, whether, you know, it is with respect to the goals of Dharmartha Kama or Moksha. We will see which part addresses what as we move along. But our scriptures take care of ways and means by which all four goals can be achieved. And since it teaches, commands and saves the humanity, it is called Shastram. Tra means to save. So, Shasana Prayate iti Shastram, that which saves the humanity from problems by commandment in the initial stages and by enlightenment in the later stages. Now, Shastram has different layers of scriptures, okay? The primary ones being Vedas. Now, the Vedas are four, right? Rig Veda, Yajurveda, Sama Veda and Atharvana Veda, okay? The Rig Veda mantras are poetic compositions. I'm not going to expand on this because most of us know what is Rig Veda, Yajurveda, etc. Yajurveda has more mantras in the form of prose or gatya. Sama Veda is musical and Atharvana Veda is more mantras. And in fact, they have mantras for removing even, you know, snake poison, etc. Very, very down-to-earth, practical kind of mantras. And Veda means a treasure house of knowledge. So, our Vedas are four in number, and all the people in the olden days used to be divided as per one of the Vedas, because Vyasacharya laid out that, you know, instead of each person learning all the four Vedas, each one could learn just one Veda or a few parts of that particular Veda, right? So Veda is also called Shruti. This is a very, very important point. Now, Guru Upadeshena Shruyate Iti Shruti. Okay, this is obtained through Guru's Upadesha and from one Guru to the student. Because those days there was no way of writing and studying using PowerPoint or technology or notebooks or any of them, right? Now, the other important thing is, Swamiji jokes, you know, Rishivati Iti Rishihi. The person who receives is Rishi, right? But that is just jokes apart. Now that which is received by hearing. So Shruti is something that is received by hearing. And it is Apaurusheyam, which means it has not been handed down by human beings. Human being is not an author for the Vedas. We firmly believe that Apaurusheya Pramanam existed in the atmosphere and the rishis who were able to receive this because they had special sensory powers to receive this, could receive it and then transmit it thereafter to their students and then it came down. So these Vedas, these Shrutis are all Apaurusheya Shabdas from the first and they form the first and the foremost and primary scriptural literature, right? All other scriptural literature is based on this Vedic foundation only. And that is why our sampradaya is called Vaidika Sampradaya and all of this that follows comes under Sanatana Dharma also, right? So the first layer is the Shruti or the Veda and just briefly, the Veda is divided into, every Veda is divided into Samhita, Brahmana, Aranyaka and Upanishad and Samhita, Brahmana and Aranyaka generally cater to the Veda Purva or Karma Kanda portion and Vedanta or Jnana Kanda is covered through Upanishad. This is the normal 95%, this is how it will be. There may be one or two cases where something is present elsewhere, but clearly what we refer to as Veda Antabhaga is the one that covers the Upanishad part of the Vedas. So, it goes without saying that each of the Vedas, each of the four Vedas have a Upanishadic part in them and we have different Upanishads like say Katha Upanishad, Kena Upanishad, Ishavashi Upanishad, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, etc. belonging to different Vedas and every Veda will have at least one or two Upanishads. Okay? This is the first layer. Also, the first layer, which is the topmost, is called the Shruti, right? And that represents the, I would say, the topmost or fundamental layer of the Vedic literature. Now, after this comes Sutrani or aphorisms, as we call it. Sutranis are nothing but the same teaching that is available in Vedas, which is available in sutra form. What sutra means is, what do we mean by sutra is, it is a cryptic or a very short form, right? Like your acronyms, mnemonics, slightly bigger than mnemonics, right? For example, if you see in a Brahma Sutra, which is one of the Advaita Sutrani, which comes under Prasthana Trayam, which has been authored by Veda Vyasa, it starts with Athato Brahma Jignyasa, right? Which is just three words, if you may say so. And if what it means is, thereafter, therefore, Brahman inquiry should be done. This is an example of a sutra. I'm not going to get into details of Sutrani here because I'm just presenting the layer. This one sutram is expanded so much by Shankaracharya and Vyasa himself when he's teaching, etc. And it will communicate the teachings in an elaborate form after that. But for remembering, it is easier to codify and therefore all of them are coded into sutrams. Now, the sutram is not just, very specific to only the Vedanta part. It is also there in other areas like, you know, you have sutrams even in Vyakarana Shastra, etc., right? So, Panini Sutras are there, etc. So, I am not getting into the detail of sutrams here, but sutra is a codified or simple form by which you can remember. So those days this was important, since you know they had to remember a lot of concepts and there was no writing, right? So this is the second layer. So after the Shruti comes what we call a Smriti. Smriti, in general, we refer to anything which we have heard and we remember. So in that, the second layer is what we just now saw, which is Putrani. And the third layer is what we refer to as Smriti proper. We call it Smriti, like Manu Smriti, Yajnavalkya Smriti, Parashara Smriti, etc. And what these tried to do was, basically in Smritis, we could actually see rules and regulations as well as governance aspects for how a country should be run, how a society should be run, how a family should be run, etc. So if you see Manu Smriti, it gave lot of rules for how a family should be there. There are even Smritis which talk about what should happen after death of a person, what kind of rituals should you do, who is supposed to participate, who is not supposed to participate. It's like a manual. So Smriti caters to that. That is the third layer of the scriptures. Now the fourth layer of the scripture is called Itihasa, right? If you see Ramayana, it runs to 24,000 verses, and then Mahabharata runs to about 100,000 verses. It is said that whatever you can't find in Mahabharata, you cannot find anywhere else. And whatever you find in Mahabharata is what is found elsewhere. So you look at the characters of Mahabharata, you will see almost all types of characters that anyone would have imagined even in today's management, situation. So all of them are available in Mahabharata and in Ramayana. So many values are taught. So many types of characters are there. You learn politics, you learn administration, you learn values. Right, everything is available in Itihasa, and Itihasa will support anything that the scripture has already taught. So it is all aligned. There is no contradiction with respect to the Shruti or especially with the Shruti and the Sutani. So Itihasa is a very large literature, right, which is available, which we call as the fourth layer. Now, the fourth and fifth layers, you really can't sort of say 3 is 5 or 5 is 4, because there are some overlaps, right? But it is important to note that Itihasa is a very voluminous and large layer. Then comes Puranas, right? Now Puranas main job was to codify, clarify and magnify, right? So if you take Satyam Vada, right, it is just one value which has been expanded so much in Harishchandra Purana, right? Then if you take Pitru Devo Bhava, right, you will see that that is expanded in Nachiketa's story, right? So you can also see the Shravan Kumar story. So if you see Puranas, whole lot of Puranas, which we have 18 Puranas and 18 Upapuranas, each one of them will have multiple values which are getting propagated in a kind of story form. So there is some overlap between Itihasa and Purana, but Puranas also have a lot of these, pujas, parayanams, etc. If you take Devi Mahatmyam, it comes in Markandeya Puranam. If you take Lalita Sahasranamam, it comes in Brahmanda Puranam. So different Puranams have different shlokas and different pujas. So Puranas cater to both stories as well as rituals and pujas. Now, the sixth layer, which is, clearly a layer which stands apart from all the other layers, is what we refer to as Bhashyam. Okay? Shankaracharya has actually written, now the reason why I talked about Shankaracharya here is, considering the fact that we are going to be discussing Advaita, it is important for us to talk about Shankaracharya's Bhashyam. He has written Bhashyams on Gita, on almost all the primary Upanishads, as well as on Brahma Sutra, right? Now, if you take Bhashyam, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad Bhashyam by Shankaracharya is so voluminous, and the Vartikam by his student, right? So, when you take the Bhashyam literature, it is not only the primary Acharyas who wrote Bhashyam, but if you see their students, they wrote, the Vartikam. Vartikam is more like, a poetical kind of form, while Bhashyam is more a prose kind of commentary. Now, if you see Vartikam by Sureshwaracharya runs to about 12,000 verses on Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad itself is so large, right? And if you take the Vartikam, that is again large. And then if you see Vidyaranyaka Swami's Bhashyam on the Vartikam, that is even more, you know, really expounding on all these, right? And an example is, because, you know, Swamiji is actually teaching Panchadashi now. In one verse of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, 4.4.12, one particular verse has been expanded to 297 verses in Panchadashi. So this entire Guru Parampara and the way they have expanded and explained what is there in the Upanishads, because Upanishads are really, really cryptic in several areas. So the Acharyas have done a great job of expanding and expounding on them. Now this sampradaya becomes very, very important. So the learning from a guru down to another shishya to shishya becomes very, very important, because without the sampradaya, the mere translation is not going to help us. If you look at the dictionary and translate, this is the exact teaching that, say, Sureshwaracharya or Shankaracharya wanted to propagate would get lost. Therefore, it is important to follow the guru parampara and go through the sampradaya and learn from a guru in person, right? So, in summary, the six layers of shastram start with Shruti, then you have Sutrani, then you have Smriti, then you have Itihasa, and then you have Puranani and Bhashyam, right? These are the six different layers, and if you see, the Shruti is Apaurusheya, all the others are Paurusheya. Now, other than the Bhashyams that I talked about, we also have a lot of granthas called Prakarana Granthas, which is based on all these. Several Acharyas have written several books in the Advaita system itself. Those are called Prakarana Granthas, right? So, that is the other layer which supports the Bhashyam, right? So, basically, what is the connection? Why did we speak about Shastram? Shastram helps us attain all these Purusharthas that we talked about. It is okay if the beauty of Hinduism is, if you want to go after Dharmartha Kama, the Shastra says, please do so. Go ahead. I have solutions for you. I have prescriptions for you. If you want to choose the higher order goal, which is moksha, then I will show you a path through the route of Upanishad. And as Shastram, I cater to all the four categories of Purusharta. So, Shastram here refers to the entire scripture and Sanatana Dharma, which caters to all the four Purusharthas. This is the final connection. So, now, whatever we will be seeing after we finish these terminologies, etc., will be based on what we are going to see, what is available in the Upanishad, right? So, Veda Purva Bhaga, which caters to Dharmartha Kama, is also part of Shruti. Veda Anta Bhaga, which caters to the Moksha part, is also part of Shruti. So, this is the complete layout of the Shastra. Okay? So, now we will take any questions.
Okay.
I'm just
going
to see if there are questions here.
Yeah, there are more questions.
Yeah.
So, we stop that, moksham, mukti, huh? So, yeah. So, the question, one more repeat question is, similar question is, moksham, should it come only at the end of human life? Which you've already answered, that we will take it in due course.
Yeah.
Could you also throw some light on detached attachment? That is one question.
Detached attachment, we will definitely cover as part of the, I think, 9th or 10th topic.
Okay. One more question. What do you think of criticism of Adi Shankaracharya by some personalist Astika schools as a Buddhist in disguise?
To the best of my knowledge, now I'm going to talk to you about what I know and what I have picked up over the years. Now, इनसे मांडुक्य कारिका भाष्यम रिटन बाय आदिशंकरा एंड द वे ही हैज रेफ्यूटेड द फोर टेक्स्ट ऑफ बुद्धिज्म राइट At least that's definitely not the personal feeling that I get after I've gone through Mandukya Karika, right? So that much I can tell you. This is very, very specific with respect to Adi Shankara being a pseudo-Buddhist. So if he was able to refute all the four Buddhism texts in Mandukya Karika in such great detail and depth, I think Advaita Vedanta is something that he really, really believed in and he worked towards and he's established so much. And I don't think any of us can even, we are even qualified to speak about it.
Okay. Thank you. Next question. Moksham, Mukti, Siddhi, Samadhi. Are these all same?
Moksham, Mukti. Moksha and Mukti refer to the same thing, Siddhi and
Samadhi.
Samadhi. We'll talk about Samadhi and Siddhi as we move along. But in the context of Advaita Vedanta, Siddhi is accomplishment of a goal and Samadhi we will discuss about it because there are a lot of connotations with respect to it and we will discuss in detail on, whether Advaita Vedanta believes in a thoughtless state, etc. We will discuss this as we move on.
Okay. Can you please reiterate the originators or proponents of the six Astika Darshanas?
Yeah, I will give you the exact names. Now, Yogacara was Patanjali. Then, just give me half a second because I don't want to make any mistakes. Yeah. The following. We have Kapila for Sankhya, Kapila Muni for Sankhya, Yoga Darshanam Patanjali, Nyaya Darshanam Gautama, Vaisheshika Darshanam Kanada, and Jaimini for Purva Mimamsa and Vyasacharya for Uttara Mimamsa.
Okay. Is it Atharva Veda or Atharvana Veda? That is one question.
Did I make a mistake? Or one second. It is Atharvana Veda, but let me just come back to you. Let me check, okay?
Okay.
But I don't want to just say something. Let me note down. Yeah.
Next, the list is increasing very
no
much.
No problem, go ahead, please. As long as, if you want to continue, then let me do the Purnamada so that if people want to log off, they can log off.
Okay. Soumya, what is the suggestion? Because I think there are at least 8 or 10 more questions and the questions are coming in, more questions are coming in.
Yes, I understand that when the first class, so we are actually very happy with the enthusiastic response. But as she has clarified that many of these will probably get resolved as and when we get into the individual topics and or maybe they are better answered in their particular place. So what we can do is we can send the complete list of questions. I mean, we can compile it after the class and whatever can be answered now, we can, send an email or something because it's already, I think, past this one. So 9:35. So I think we can close the session for today and we'll definitely get back to all questions by the next class or, as and when they fit, wherever they fit.
Yeah, I just suggest one thing, Soumya. Vishwam, if there's something very, very relevant to today's class, you can just ask those along and we can close it.
We can do. If there's anything so specifically based on what was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there are the next 4 or 5 questions, if I see, are relating to commonly on the scriptures part. For example, what is the reason for order between Samhita, Brahmana, Aranyaka Upanishad? How many Aranyakas are there? Some Upanishads are part of Brahmana Aranyaka also. Apastamba Sutras. Those kind of Vedic scripture related questions is entirely one group of 5-6 questions are there.
I think we don't have to take those up at all, Vishwam, because they are very specific to Vedas and they are not going to cover this part at all. So, if any of you can, you know, if you have more information on that, we can always respond. But otherwise, if it's specific to Vedanta, then we can take it up.
Right. Okay. Perfect. So, very those kind of statistical or fact educative questions around the scriptures are there. Anything on Vedanta? Apurusheyam. Okay. I think those are the only questions. All others are pretty much general questions, which over a period we can answer about Vishnu Sahasranamam, Bhagavad Gita, which Shastram, multiple Vedas, multiple Upanishads, 10 Upanishads, those kind of questions are there, which I think we can take it up later. But there's a general question about availability of material. Can we get these shlokas? Can we get the material and other thing? Saumya, if you can just help that, because that's a standard answer actually.
Yes. So the complete video recording of the class and the presentation as a PDF will be uploaded in our portal, that is www.sanskritfromhome.in. So you can download them. So we'll usually take 2 or maximum 3 days. They will definitely be available after that. So you can, the material, whatever is there, the PDF and also the video recording and an audio file if you prefer to do that.
Yeah, and Soumya, what I'll do from my side is, if you can just download all the questions for me, I'll try and respond saying at least, you know, this is, you know, I can answer this. This one will come in this session and maybe this is out of scope or something. Right?
Yes.
I can keep this off so that it helps everybody. And we can upload it on the site along with my PPT also.
Definitely. Yes? We can do that. Definitely.
Now, I have to do the Purnamada also, Soumya, now.
Please go ahead. Complete with the Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate.
पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेव वशिष्यते ओम शांति 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 हरि ओम. All of you can actually tell along with me because general practice is to start with Sadashiva Samarambham and end with Purnamada Purnamidam. Thank you and namaste to everybody.